Yeah, no, I mean, it's been a busy time, and of course, it's going to be busy next quarter as well, but you know, I think we'll muscle through it. I still need to go check out the Batman v Superman movie, even though, of
Why
course,
would
all
you
the
do that?
reviews are going to be
It
absolutely
looks so
terrible.
bad.
It's everybody says it's bad. I think it's
Don't give them your money. It's just encouraging them to make more bad movies.
I support my local theater.
Do your part as an American, Wilson. Get that movie illegally. If it's a movie that you don't want to encourage the creation of, make sure to do it illegally.
Well, let me put it this
Download
way. I will encourage
Batman.
anything that would generate more Batman in places, you know.
Well, then, like, rent Batman Begins a bunch of times so that, like, a good movie can be made.
Where do you rent movies these days? I guess Amazon,
yeah,
but,
you
like,
can
I'm just like, there's no more Blockbuster, so.
You can do a digital rental.
I guess so. But you can only rent it once at a time, right? Well, I have to sign up
No, I don't think so. I think
20 accounts.
No, you can rent as many as you want, but you only have them for 24 hours, I think.
Okay.
I think that's how Amazon and iTunes both do it, and probably other services, is you pay the $4 or $5 or however much, and then you get 24 hours to watch it.
Okay. So I guess that could work.
Yeah. Yeah, it could work. You could do that. That's I think that's called voting with your wallet.
There we go.
So, speaking of voting with your wallet, today on the Tableau on Tableau podcast, we're going to talk about the influence that the consumers of data within a business have upon the creation and consumption of reporting and visualization and data analysis. How's that for a segue?
It was probably one of our better ones. I mean, I think I'm gonna one day just turn it all around, and we'll do analytics on all your segues and see how far you have to stretch.
Are you tracking them in some kind of database?
Well, I mean, we have all these podcasts, and at some point I'm going
to
have a scientist
to
actually go back and...
You'll apply a Segway rating to each one.
Segway rating? That should be a thing, shouldn't it?
Yeah, probably. Scale of 1 to 10.
Anyways, let's dive a little bit into, I guess, today's question, which is around...
I'm going to call it, What is Self-Service? That is going to be my title. So we were talking a few minutes before we started recording, and I think the idea that we want to discuss here today is Tableau exists in this market of analytics or business intelligence or whatever you want to call it, and a common word for what we do in terms of dashboards and interactive reporting and things like that is self-service. Right, self-service analytics. And we hear this all the time from our customers, but a lot of them have different perspectives on what it really means. And we just wanted to discuss that and talk about some of the things we hear from our customers when they say they want self-service analytics. What are they asking for and what are they trying to do? And then when it comes to us, what is our vision for it? And what are some of the things that Tableau does to enable that? And what's our perspective? Because I think Tableau actually has quite a few features that someone might classify as a self-service analytic feature, but they can be used in a lot of different ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I have on the docket to discuss. Wilson, I mean, when you hear this self-service term, what do you think of?
So I keep thinking of course, how we typically think of it internally, right? So us being sort of this group of folks who kind of either developed from product consulting or, of course, our sales consultants, we're autonomous for the most part when it comes down to how we, of course, ask questions and how we approach communicating information to other people. What really matters, of course, is just having both a platform to pull data from and then ultimately to share information out. But for the most part, you know, you can kind of interchange myself with Jeremy, with Andrew Hill, and all these guys basically will ask similar or different questions based upon what is kind of in their heads at the moment. And they would basically operate completely separately and autonomously from one another that's there. So I think that's always been sort of my starting point of the definition of self-service. But I know, of course, this is a sort of a term that's kind of thrown around very easily. And so I guess what's your take on it?
Yeah, so when you say yourself or Jeremy or Andrew Hill, are you kind of referring to yourselves as like consumers of self-serve analytics in your analogy?
Right. We're consumers. We're people that happen to be in our company that happen to be, of course, just be interested in data. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the self-service aspect around it, right?
Yeah, I think generally we hear the word self-service used sort of as a very high level term that's just meant to encapsulate this analytics world where anyone can ask a question, right? Anyone can analyze data. And I think there's actually a few different attitudes and points of view toward what that really means. 'Cause for some people, self-service analytics just means the reporting is traditional reporting. It's still created by a technologist. It's still a kind of row and column or scripted or automated report in some kind. But the self-service element is that instead of having to go to a queue and submit a request or something, you just go online and you download one, right? That could be considered self-service reporting because you go grab it yourself. Right. But other people would have a different perspective, and other people would say, no, it's not self-service reporting unless the audience is actually the one generating the report, right? So someone within the business is able to decide what they want to analyze and share, and they get to go create it themselves. And the technology is sufficient so they can do so. And then There's sort of a middle ground, right, which is probably the technologists build the architecture and infrastructure to be able to do the reports, and then the consumers just make the selections to kind of customize reporting for what they're trying to do. And that might be considered like a report generator model or something like that, where someone goes and clicks a bunch of buttons and about what they want, and it spits out a picture or a spreadsheet or something like that. So there's all these different philosophies. I think probably when most of our customers envision self-service, they're envisioning the last thing I said or something like that, where it's either a dashboard or a UI where they select a range of dates in a category. But they're not actually building everything themselves. They're kind of manipulating an infrastructure that's already been built for them. Would you agree with that? That's kind of the generally accepted.
I actually would argue that that's not so much the case. It's kind of all over the place depending on who you're talking to. But it really does seem like the IT conversation that we're typically hearing, that's been sort of the standard conversation for it. So self-service around dashboarding is really around customization of the dashboard, more so than anything around asking new questions or asking new insights that's there. That varies quite a bit once you get over to the business side, and what they're seeking is not necessarily a single product or finished result, and what they're really looking for is just a quick way to ask and answer through their own questions that's there. So I kind of find it varies depending on sort of the group that you're talking to, which obviously makes, of course, some of our day-to-day conversations somewhat interesting because everybody is pointing to the same thing, but providing a very different definition of it.
Hmm. So you don't think that it's this more dashboard model? You think it's more kind of distributed across different attitudes and within the businesses that you work with?
I think so. I think there's a bit of feedback loop from sort of just the industry itself, right? We keep hearing self-service, and it's been slowly equated to just these dashboards that are interactive and are customizable. And that's feeding into, of course, what IT is, of course, feeding back to us. And so there's a little bit of a feedback loop that I kind of always see happening. But, you know, it really depends, right? Some organizations are very much so dictated on that sense of what the IT thinks and what their image of it. What they say about technology is sort of the way that technology actually works, whereas some organizations are very dictated on the questions that the business itself is asking. And so I kind of find it where I'm having a lot of conversations, like you said, that people are thinking of the term of self-service to equate to these dashboards that people can, you know, interact with, that people can swap parameters with. But what I'm finding, of course, is that I think that the conversation spans a bit outside of that, depending on sort of the groups that we are talking to day to day.
Right. Yeah, I guess it varies because the varying in opinion typically traverses like different parts of a company, right? So the IT departments are used to, I mean, their philosophy is what can we do to prepare and provide infrastructure for our business people? And how do we create service level agreements to provide things and deliver things to business, right?
Right.
And so that manifests itself into that model of creating dashboards, authoring content within a development wing, and then having the business pull what they need. Whereas a business group is probably not thinking about it in terms of a specific solution. They're probably just thinking, oh, I just want to be able to answer questions of my data. But there's a bunch of pre-assumptions about what that actually means, because they can only envision what they know. Right. And that might be Excel, or that might be a product like Tableau, or it might be something completely different. It really just depends on what their background and what their maybe biases and opinions are.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I think it really just kind of boils down to a little bit of the provider and client engagement that we typically see occurring. Right. You know, is it a provider heavy type of organization where, the technology, at the end of the day, the governance pieces and things along those lines will end up being much more important? Or is it ultimately something where the clients are going to drive much more of the infrastructure on the back end in terms of how dynamic it needs to be for each question, for each, of course, challenge that they kind of pose up there? I think everybody is still... Yeah, everybody has the right idea. I don't think anybody would disagree that self-service, well, some, very few groups of people would disagree that self-service is a ideal state for where BI wants to head to. The biggest question still is ultimately what can be, like you said, what is the service that people can actually guarantee? And I think different organizations have a very different opinion specifically on that term.
Yeah, I think it boils down to, I think, how I think it really, the power in a lot of cases lies in IT, and it's kind of what IT's philosophy is in a business about how they should share information with their business customers. I mean, a lot of them will refer to the business as their customer. Right. And I was thinking about this the other day, and I was thinking about like, how a lot of it seems to me to be sort of the different philosophies that a parent might have about how to educate their child, right? Because that, you know, some parents will, when their kid asks them a question, they'll say, "Oh yeah, sure. Well, here's the answer. Where did babies come from? Here's the answer to that, right? What is this? The answer to this math problem? Well, here's the answer to that, right?" They just tell them the answer to what their kid asks, and some of them ask them, "Well, what do you think? Or how do you think you could answer the question, right?" And I think those are kind of two different, I don't know, they're probably two different parenting perspectives. I'm not a parent, but I'm sure that's sort of something that parents deal with a lot in terms of how they share information with their kid and how that maybe teaches them to be a more curious person or how they learn, right? But I was thinking about something my mom was telling me the other day, because I have a niece who's in elementary school. Well, now she's in middle school, but a couple years ago she was in elementary school and she was learning how to spell. And when I was in elementary school, the way I learned how to spell is we'd have spelling tests, right? And you'd kind of learn phonetical spelling and you'd kind of remember the way different things were spelled. And then you'd do a spelling test and you'd get a bunch of words and you'd try to spell them correctly. And if you got them wrong, you didn't get as high a grade on the test. But the way my niece was learning spelling was what my mom referred to as best guess spelling, which is more about just, does your reasoning for how you think something should be spelled make sense? Mm. So if you tried to spell the word education, right, mm-hmm. You would probably know that it started with E, and you might put a K in there instead of the C, or you might put an S in the shun part instead of a TI or something like that. But if you can kind of phonetically sound it out and then have someone then explain to you, okay, well, there's this other thing you can use to represent the sh sound, which is TI or something like that. Then you learn better and you learn more of the way of doing things. So this is a long analogy, I just realized, but the reason I think that's kind of a valuable way to think about how IT will inform a business is because some IT departments believe that the best way to share information with their business customers is just to give them the answers, right? And just say, here's the answers, and do whatever you want with the answers. And some of them, I think, realize that maybe a better way to learn is to encourage people to experiment and try things out for themselves. And then if they learn that that's a bad approach, then they have a better understanding of that decision-making process. Mm. But I guess a counter to that might be, are you putting yourself at risk by allowing people to do that sort of experimentation?
Right. So yeah, and of course, the biggest thing that most IT organizations are dealing with, to carry on with your analogy, is that it's not just one kid that you're trying to teach. It's typically, well, a lot of kids and a growing amount of kids, right? Mm-hmm. And trying to make it scalable is definitely one of the big challenges that people are coming across.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I think that's something that kind of tends to govern IT's philosophies quite a bit is it's a little bit less, they think about it a little less in terms of what would be most beneficial for someone who is just trying to learn how to make the right decisions based on the information that exists. And they think about it more in terms of how can they most efficiently share information. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of the governing philosophy that comes into these self-service right. models. So anyway, I don't need to beat that to death anymore. But I do think that kind of dovetails nicely into, you know, what we see out there, right? Mm-hmm. So what are some things that you see your customers doing when they're thinking about enabling self-service using Tableau or using anything? I mean, I'm sure you have some customers that don't end up buying Tableau and they use something else. Mm-hmm. Regardless of that, what are some of the philosophies that govern their perspective on how to enable data analysis and self-service for their business customers?
Sure. So for some folks, it's really about that they want to get away from sort of the asking question business as much as possible, right? They realize that there are spending a lot of cycles doing that, and it makes sense for them to be able to offload it. And that's where sort of ease of use tool like a Tableau is going to be helpful for them, mainly because they don't need to worry about the education aspect of it. They can really give just that platform for people to plug into data. And typically, you know, unless their servers aren't scaled correctly or their database isn't scaled correctly for analytical purposes, it's generally a pretty risk-free way of the end users asking their own set of questions against basically the data store of information that they have access to. Mm-hmm. So that's one sort of philosophy around it, where it's just saying, okay, well, the end user knows best about what they need, what they need access to. And from there, they can do what they want.
My summary of that philosophy would be, we need to steward and protect the data, but the end user should have freedom to ask the questions that are relevant to them.
Right.
Okay. Are there other philosophies that you encounter from your customers?
Sure. I mean, so I think it's a spectrum that what we start to kind of go down, right? So there's definitely sort of that spectrum where people are saying, you know, what questions you ask and how you might want to get your answers for that question is completely up to you. We will govern the data. We will, of course, focus on basically how that will work. For other folks, though, they focus on sort of specifically different areas of it, right? So for some other folks, it's really much more of the idea of, well, we govern the data store as is, but we will actually farm out the information to you for you to basically ask the questions from that subset that is farmed out to you.
So do you mean they're taking the questions that they think are going to be most common and kind of sharing the answers in sort of a set of different analyses and saying, we think you might ask one of these 10 questions. So here's a set of pictures or reports or whatever that answer those questions.
I would say even more broad than that, right? So these are, of course, the folks that focus on sort of a broad approach for exporting of data out to their end users. So you could think about basically Report Builder, where people can, of course, tailor what fields are in their report, export it out, and then at that point, that CSV or that text file that goes out to who knows where is going to be managed directly by that end user who requested that information, right? So it's self-service from requesting of that data. And of course, for that, you know, it's pretty much hands-off, you know, from that, the question answering aspect of it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common way of doing what an IT department might call BI, right? Which is, we're going to give them a bunch of controls that sort of limit the data that they'll get out of our system, and then it's going to give them a report. And I think it's a really interesting way of doing things, because it actually is maybe a good way of enabling a business user to kind of say, well, I want to go ask my own questions of the data, but I just want to kind of narrow it down and find what makes sense to me first. Yeah. And having the system kind of do all the joins and manipulation and things like that are necessary to have a data set that makes sense for that frame. What I don't know that all technology departments realize, what I think they probably don't always realize, is what the user is usually doing is going and taking that, opening it in Excel, and then like throwing it in a pivot table or doing calculations on it or something like that. So they're doing sort of additional analysis on top of it that, maybe would be, you know, in our perspective, would be better if they just took a tool like a Tableau and just asked those questions directly on top of the data with that, because then they wouldn't lose like the versioning and governance and timeliness of a data warehouse.
Right. Yeah, so I think on that aspect, it's interesting, because we start to see a little bit of a divergence around basically what that the governance piece really means for them, right? So in this particular example, the governance of the data becomes less important, but the means of how they actually offer up that information, so how many rows or how many columns are available for export, those end up actually being some more of the limiting factors that we typically see with that approach, right?
Isn't that such a weird like thing? I mean, it's so strange to me when companies want to do that. Like, they want to do it to protect the database against long-running queries and things like that. But what ends up happening is by creating those limits, they create wrong information.
Yeah. And it might be just, I think for us, we're starting to confuse it from sort of philosophy versus the limitations a little bit. But it just seems like, those, if we go with sort of an ungoverned mechanic, you end up basically hitting some sort of limit that naturally simply occurs. And so, I think we can get back to that point as well. To your point, I mean, thinking through sort of the different strategies for it, the other strategy is to say, we will build interactivity for you. We will produce what people will see, and they will be delighted by the by the means or the combinations that we've designed for them to answer their own questions from that point forward. So this is, of course, the approach of, hey, we've created a well-designed dashboard, or maybe sometimes a not well-designed dashboard, and we are offering this up for you to be able to review your information and to be able to review the information from there. So sort of self-service in the realms of the deliverable.
Right. And that's sort of the perspective that a dashboard is an application, right? Mm-hmm. That is built for the purpose of answering questions. And when you build an application, you think about, okay, all the things that people are going to use this application for, and how do they do that? And so if you kind of translate that to dashboard, it's what are all the questions that people have, and does the dashboard provide them the functionality to answer all those questions in what feels like a free-form environment, but is in some way limited to a set of questions or a set of capabilities?
Right.
Okay, so I think that's a pretty good... Right. Rundown of the different types of ways that businesses will do this sort of self-service thing. Yeah. Now, you mentioned a story prior to our starting the recording about customers that you were dealing with that were doing things with subscriptions. Mm-hmm. I was curious on how you think that ties into this.
So subscriptions end up being sort of the final piece, I think, within that puzzle that's there. And it's sort of this idea of self-service. It's actually almost sort of this idea of sort of the anti-self-service, right? So everything is already automatically done for you. At this point, you wake up in the morning and you have all of the different dashboards that you need in your inbox, or, of course, wherever you get possibly even printed off as a set of reports, right? And the expectation is self-service really in terms of, hey, we provided you with all the synthesized information, and your only sort of self-service approach to it is what you glean off of the provided results that's there. So a very sort of narrowed down approach for self-service at this point.
Well, yeah, I don't know if I completely agree with that, because if you look at how Tableau does subscriptions, for example, we do send something to your inbox, but then we let you link back into the live interactive dashboard. Right. And so you do get to answer your own questions. It's pushed to you. So the idea that you get notified in some way saying, hey, it's time to look at data, right? And then you go and are encouraged to interact with it is actually, I think, sort of appealing. Now, I don't know if sending someone something to their email inbox is the best way of doing that, but I do think it's a way of engaging customers of analytics.
And I think so, too. It's just one of those things where I find it where at that point they're really thinking on the behalf of their consumers about what they would need to look at, or what they would need to answer at that point, right? And that's a very sort of different approach than what we started off with, which is much more around how do we enable asking questions, against sort of a governed data set there.
Okay. So what do you typically recommend to customers who are very, insistent in using subscriptions?
It really depends upon sort of what the use case is, right? So one thing that I always encourage is to definitely, test out how Tableau works, see how it interacts with how people are understanding and starting conversations, and then reevaluate whether or not that ends up being sort of a strong strategy moving forward, right? A lot of times I think people do find it becoming less and less important to burst out a series of reports when they know that they can communicate or react to information faster by having a conversation around it. And so that's one big piece that I try to push on. But beyond that, though, I mean, Tableau Server does have some of those capabilities, right? I don't want to deprecate the fact that, just because it's not necessarily the way that I see the world, it's not the customer's request is any less valid with our tool.
I want to kind of start getting into that piece of whether a customer's request is valid or not from the perspective of where do people typically where do people typically fail or have problems when they're doing self-service analytics? And I think subscriptions is a good place to get into that because, you know, you're talking about what they'll often test from the Tableau side and what we can do. But what I have found, and I don't know if you found the same thing, but what I've found is that when it comes to subscriptions, our customers' perspective of what a tool should do is often a little different from what Tableau does. So, for example, a common question is, well, why do they have to go log into Tableau server to subscribe to something? Why can't I just subscribe them to it?
Right.
Which doesn't exist in our UI. I think it will. I think we've announced that it's going to in a future version, but it doesn't yet. And what I have found is that when we introduce features at Tableau, a lot of times we introduce them in response to customer requests, but in implementation, they're something that fits much more closely to our vision, which is a much more end-user-driven analytics, which is less involvement from a technologist. So that's a good example. The subscription thing, people had asked us for subscriptions for a while. When you and I started, we kind of had all these hacky workarounds for how to do sort of schedule-based subscriptions that didn't really fit in the tool, but people kind of had figured it out, right? And then we built it into our software, but we did it in a way so that it was still a user-guided action, right? It was still something that someone had to go request themselves in the Tableau server UI. Are there things like that, either that or something else that you find that your customers are asking for when it comes to subscriptions that we don't do?
Well, I mean, it's a lot around alerts, right?
Data-driven alerting.
Right, yeah. So when do I need to pay attention to a dashboard? How smart is Tableau at informing me what I need to look into, right? Mm-hmm. And it's always an interesting conversation around how you assess the situation and how does the tool actually get smart enough to figure out basically what that really means for us. I don't know. I don't think, of course, we have a good answer for it right now. But at the same point, I don't think anything out there has a really good answer about how we should run our business. And so that's sort of the counter argument to all this.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of what I want to get into because mm-hmm. What I have found, so like what I said, in terms of Tableau sort of introducing features that kind of fit within our vision, even though they're in response to something that a customer says we should change. I think the data-driven alerting thing is another thing where, you know, philosophically we can say, well, when you're analyzing data, it's probably better to be proactive and go look at data because that's going to allow you to discover things that you weren't prepared for, rather than a purely pull, or I guess it's push-based model where the server is pushing analytics to you, where you're only going to ever notice anything that you had kind of anticipated before. So you're not going to learn the answer to the things that you hadn't discovered yet, which is really what analytics should be for. It's for learning and discovery in addition to just general reporting. Right. So what I want to get into is there is how much of that philosophy, well, I guess maybe to precede what I was going to say, what do you think our recommended way of doing self-service is at Tableau?
That's a really interesting question there.
Is it really? It sounds like you're being sarcastic.
No, it is. I am actually 100%. Because I think we've evolved from what that really is, right? As we kind of grew as a company, our vision of it was much more and more mature.
Well, let's go back and talk about that evolution, because I think that's actually a really interesting way of describing it. So Tableau has been – hold on a second. My computer is doing something weird, and I want to make sure the recording doesn't stop. I just didn't touch it for a while, and it got mad at me for letting it go to sleep. That sounds like I'm talking about a girlfriend. Okay. Anyway, history of Tableau's attitude for self-service or data analytics. So I think you can break down the history of Tableau into, I'm going to say, let's see, one, two, three, maybe four stages. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say four. So the first one is versions, Tableau versions 0 through 3, right? Mm-hmm. Before we had a server, right?
Right.
Which was purely a end user installed on each individual's desktop and pretty much no sharing capabilities outside right. of like screenshotting.
Yeah, yeah. We had printing to PDF at some point, but it was, you know, that was really consuming information was really, of course, what was between you and the screen, as well as potentially, of course, just through these little sort of static, you know, forums that's there. Mm.
So I guess I'd say our philosophy during that period was people need to explore data more, right? Mm-hmm. People need to spend more time sitting down and thinking about data and letting letting themselves kind of get engrossed in information and asking questions of it. The second stage is kind of Tableau's version 4 through 6, I'm going to say, which is kind of the first version of server through kind of the architectural improvements we made to the software, like the data engine and calculations that enabled people to do more advanced analytics. Mm-hmm. What would you say, like, if you were going to look at Tableau version 5 or 6, which is kind of when you and I started at right. the firm, what would you say our overarching vision for analytics or self-service was at that point?
Hardline poll analytics that's there, right? So what we saw was that there was definitely a need, that there was a separation between sort of the typical data analyst versus somebody who was just receiving information, who want to review information, but to ask some of their basic information from there. Now, for that group, they would still be curious, intellectually curious about the data. But their needs around it would be very specific, right? So they typically might have, you know, X number of controls, X number of things that they would look after, and that was sort of the way that they would see the world. That was kind of around them. The other aspect around it, and it could, again, just be the limitation of the tool at the time, was also in terms of how they actually got their information. Mm-hmm. The only means that they were that they could get their information at the time was really by logging in manually and requesting the information themselves. So there was a individual that was driven enough in order to get information from the server. And from there, they would be given much more of that flexibility around how to ask questions from that interaction that they would make.
Right. Yeah, I think my perspective is pretty similar to yours, but I'd say generally, the philosophy there was, again, more people should be engaged with data, and the additional thing is that we should be able to share it with other people, share the results with other people. So analytics is still done individually. It's still done in the desktop, but there's more ways to engage other people with the results. So I think up until version 6... up until version 3, you'd probably call us sort of a niche analytics exploration company. And then from versions 4 through 6, I think you'd probably call us a data visualization company. Mm-hmm. And then the third stage, I think, is version 7 through 9. So taking through today, which is kind of what I would call it is analytics at scale. So we kind of took all the Tableau capabilities and tried to make them bigger, right? We made the server much more scalable and faster and easier to use for larger enterprises. We added things like high availability. We added in subscriptions. We added in web editing. So we made it so more end users could get engaged with content in different ways. And that's kind of where we are at now. Mm-hmm. But I think after that, if you look to the future, there is an additional evolution to our vision. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're starting to kind of bridge the gap quite a bit for our end users. Things like, for example, web authoring is actually coming in pretty close parity, I think, for sort of dashboard creation and for people building their own content directly in the server space that's there. There's more avenues too to kind of think about sort of that consumption piece, right? So when they are getting information, you know, how they're informed is really spanning across different platforms. So we're now thinking around sort of this idea, like what we mentioned earlier, of possibly, of course, doing much more sort of push analytics and using that aspect of informing people that they need to get engaged with information that's there. Mm-hmm. So I'm starting to see sort of the bridge where we are both going a little bit more hardline, that people will be able to self-service off the data that's been provided. But on the other hand, we're becoming almost less self-driven from how people get informed of that data that's there.
Yeah, I guess, you know, there's kind of two ways to looking at it. One way would be that, you know, up until now or maybe a year ago or something like that, Tableau has been sort of an expansion of a singular vision around allowing people to do analytics a certain way, right? It's exploratory, it's ad hoc, the tool and product suite has grown to allow more use cases for that, but essentially it's all been kind of serving a single vision for how analytics should be done. Mm-hmm. And I think the future is more about thinking about what are all the different ways people want to think about data, right? Do they want to use their phone? Do they want to have something in their inbox? Do they want to use their watch and have a notification that pops up that says something is going on, right? I'm not saying any of these things are going to be built into future versions because I don't know, but mm-hmm. You could imagine all of those things being, some of them already are and some of them are more pie in the sky, but you can imagine all those things kind of being part of someone's analytic workflow for mm-hmm. how they do analysis. And one way of looking at it is that those changes are sort of a concession and movement away from our vision and more of a responsiveness to what customers are asking for that conflicts with the vision. And another way of looking at it is it's an expansion of the vision of Tableau, which is around allowing anyone to analyze data at any time in any way.
By the way, right now I'm building a quadrant because, you know, it's building visuals is what we do mm-hmm. of specifically the two different questions that, you know, we're thinking around sort of self-service is typically being driven off of both the idea of how do people get informed as well as how do people answer their questions. And so maybe at at some point I'll share that view with everybody.
Okay, so say that again. So how do people get informed and how do they answer their questions are the two different?
That's the way I'm thinking around it right now. Because I think when we started going through some of the different self-service or philosophies, what I started to identify was that there were sort of almost a quadrant between sort of the two different ways that people are thinking around sort of that information that's there. So I think self-service is still a spectrum, but we have to kind of look at it around sort of those two different questions.
Right. So if you're just curious, if you're building out a graph that shows mm-hmm. those two different ideas as axes, what are the contents of the graph? Is it different, like, methods of analytics? Is it different platforms? How is that organized?
Even platforms, or even, of course, like what we just discussed, even the state of what we kind of saw ourselves at, right? So the different sort of philosophy points that we kind of always hit on. So whether we're kind of moving away from one side of the quadrant to the other. Okay. So it's just a way for me to kind of conceptualize and think through this without confusing the two different ideas.
Well, that's kind of neat. I'd like to throw that up on the website if you have a version at some point. I don't want to rush you, but that'd be kind of cool to look at. All right. So back to kind of what we were saying originally, which is, you know, what is Tableau's philosophy for how self-service should be done? And it's evolved. And I think the kind of recurring theme in those different stages that we've talked through now is it should be primarily end user or audience driven. Right. It should be primarily whether or not the audience is someone who does the technical work which may or may not be true depending on the situation, because the audience can vary heavily in skill level and how much they want to involve themselves in analytics too. But regardless of that, analytics should start at a question being asked by someone who can take action based on that question, and should end at them too. And they should have as much influence over the process for answering that question as they want to.
Right.
So that's, I guess that's our philosophy. Mm-hmm. How do we typically do that? Would be kind of my next thought for self-service. So we talked about these different kind of methodologies that a lot of our customers have that kind of vary on the spectrum of more IT-driven hardline reporting to more end-user interactivity. What are some of the specifics of a Tableau self-service solution, would you say?
I think for us, it's really moving away, or the one very defining piece for us is that we've really moved away from canned analytics or template analytics being sort of something that is a vernacular of what we do, right? So almost in no situation do we ever start off a demo with something that's already pre-built for a vertical, for industry, and we insist on that, right? We typically do ask about whether or not we can connect to their data, being one of the earlier questions that's there. We talk about whether or not they have specific questions they want to get answered. And so I think that's one of the more defining points around self-service for us, that it really is this idea of an end user ultimately seeing or driving what the analytics will look like for us, what the visualizations really mean for us there, as opposed to thinking about it as sort of the other way around, as something that's being delivered consistently. The other aspect around it, I think, has always been the responsibility, I think, around each employee within the company, within the client base that they're currently looking at. And to us, I think it's still sort of this idea that everybody is still a part of that final sort of answer that's there, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody's staying informed, everybody is still staying engaged, and they're using data as a means to do so. So I think there's some sort of implied expectations around how users ask their questions, as well as, of course, how interested people typically are around those answers.
Yep. The interested part is especially relevant, because I think we have a culture that's a big part of what we sell, which is the curiosity that users have when it comes to data, and how you have to be hiring people that are curious about data and want to be inquisitive about it. The other thing that I wanted to mention there is if you're saying that our philosophy is about involving more people into the process of analytics, I think that kind of correlates. You know, we use the term democratization of data sometimes, which is sort of a cliche, but I do think it's sort of a pretty good illustration of what we want to do. So riddle me this, Batman, speaking of Batman. Let me present a scenario to you. So you're working with a customer, and they say to you, Wilson, what we would like to do, they don't know you're actually Batman, because your alter ego is Wilson Poe.
Right. Of course.
They say, Wilson, we want to do a self-service analytics solution. And the way we define self-service is by giving our users a form. And the form has which year they want to pull, and it has which region they want to pull, and it has four different metrics that they can pick from, and then they click a submit button, and it generates a dashboard that that organizes those controls into a report. Would you consider, first of all, before I ask you what you would say to the customer, would you consider that a good self-service solution?
No. There's a number of, I think, challenges that kind of come with that. And one of the big things that I've always felt was a pretty consistent point of why I thought, you know, Tableau was, well, groundbreaking technology for a lot of us, is the stopping of data proliferation that's there. Okay. So yes, it is sort of a way for them to get the data that they need and to not be hindered, that we're using technology to prevent, you know, human bottlenecks in our system there. But what we actually are promoting is a lot of different other issues around not governing your data. And it just ends up being sort of a big mess at the end of the day. So it might be sort of a good stopgap, but it's definitely not a scalable solution by my terms.
Okay, so you feel that it's not scalable because of the proliferation of data part of it. They're sacrificing perhaps the governance and control they have over their data source by allowing people to export this information, and you're assuming that they're going to do some additional analytics on top of it. Is that the risk that you see there?
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you, I mean, let me ask you this way. How would you course correct with the customer? Like if they were asking, if they're telling you they wanted to do this, how would you respond to them and advise them into doing it a more kind of recommended way?
Sure. So I think one of the things to kind of recognize is Tableau can definitely achieve what we're looking for, right? For us to actually be an interactive set of controls, for us to push out information, we have all the functions that are required to do so. Like, for example, adding in interactivity that helps us limit data, right? Mm-hmm. Quick filters do that pretty easily. Or, of course, the ability to export data so that people can actually take information to their comfortable platform from there. But the big thing I think that overlooks is the fact that whole development process between those two things is no longer really a barrier to entry, right? So a lot of times when we think about it, we develop these applets, these applet approaches for how we analyze information, mainly because those things are expensive, they're costly, they are very specialized skill. I think Tableau removes a lot of that off the table. And what you're left with is something that can actually operate a lot more efficiently without moving away from sort of this very, well, this data proliferation issue that takes place, right? And so the risk that we see is, of course, for us, we can definitely achieve it. If the customer wants to, for us to basically go down that model, we can definitely follow them to it. But from all of the successes that we've seen, it typically doesn't derive from that, right? We see success when people stay in the tool, when they actually are asking more questions of it. Mm. And that's one of the big things that I kind of will always push people more towards when they're thinking about this idea.
Yeah. The way I usually respond to stuff like that is just say, what usually happens when people have the ability to ask questions like that is they ask more questions. Mm-hmm. They can, that does enable them to quickly answer some specific questions that you've thought out for them, but it doesn't answer all their questions. And what you find is that by making it more efficient for them to ask the first question, they get to the second question faster. Mm-hmm. And what Tableau allows them to do is actually puts them in an environment, it'll put them in an environment where, they can actually ask those questions in the flow and ask one and then ask the one that naturally comes after that and then ask the third one. And at some point they'll be limited by the data that they have available, but it just will increase a lot of efficiency about how they go about their business.
Right.
If the technical capability of a user to do that is a concern, well, that's something that we've designed Tableau for and built it in a way that anyone can at least ask those initial questions and often get much more advanced. I think that's a good exercise to kind of think about the way people will typically do self-service and how Tableau sort of breaks from that. But we also have to have a recommendation to give them too and say, here's how we would prescribe doing something. Because I think both a lot of people have preconceived notions about how a self-service data solution should work, and it adheres to what has traditionally been provided in the market. And also, we have a lot of great marketing materials about how great Tableau is going to be and allow you to see and understand your data and all these things. But at some point, you do have to make it practical for your customer and talk about how they're going to use it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, especially for that issue, it kind of boils back into just thinking around the development of phone trees and sort of using that as a scalability solution that's there. It doesn't necessarily delight your customer, but it does get sort of the job done. But if we are, of course, looking at it from a very modern day approach, can we do better? And I think the answer is typically yes.
Sorry, the development of phone trees?
Phone trees, yeah. I'm thinking of phone
trees.
You
got to explain
right
the analogy a little bit for me.
So the idea, of course, of being following through a set of instructions in order to get routed to the right place.
So let's assume that some of our listeners are millennials and don't know what a phone tree is.
A phone tree, for folks who haven't actually used them much.
Because we're really popular among like 17 and 18 year olds, Wilson. I don't know if you knew that.
The Bieber fans, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally know. I'm on.
They probably don't know phone trees. So anyway, you should explain it.
Sure. So the idea there is, of course, with any sort of phone tree, it's you call in, you are routed through a set of predefined questions with predefined answers, and out comes your result from there. Sort of a predictable model of outcomes that you can actually work through. But for anyone who's been stuck on, you know, Comcast or, well, I shouldn't name names, but anybody who's tried to change their cable providers, anybody who's actually been stuck at an airport and try to rebook their flights, it's typically not the best experience within that whole mix that's there because it feels confining. You're answering questions that seem largely redundant, I think, to what the purpose really is. And it ends up being sort of a quote-unquote self-service way that isn't really quite self-service at
okay.
the end of the day.
Your analogy makes a lot more sense now. I thought you meant something completely different by phone tree.
Oh.
I thought you were talking about...
What was
like,
it? A tree?
When you were in school, did you ever have phone trees for, like, if there's an emergency, like, the teacher calls one person, and that person calls, like, two other people, and each of those people call three people, and then, like, I thought that's what a phone tree was, and it was about, like, broadcasting information quickly. Did you ever have that? Maybe
no.
Maybe I'm the old one. Okay.
Yeah.
No, that was a way that they used to, like, small organizations used to broadcast information because not everyone had email, right? So the fastest way to get a message out to everyone was to do it that way and have a predefined list of who you're going to call in the event of something that everyone needs right away.
Again, which we're confusing really this idea of asking questions and I think getting information, which seems like it's two elements that really kind of come up.
Yeah, I was kind of excited for your phone tree analogy that fit with my definition of a phone tree because I didn't see how that really related to BI, although it is sort of an ancient technology example. And your example is just kind of lame. I mean, it's like, yeah, of course a phone tree is like Tableau. I'm embarrassed that I didn't get it.
We're working.
More than embarrassed for you for coming up with a lame analogy.
Right. Well, we're working on the analogies. I mean, we've
gone
a long
way. My spelling analogy was great, by the way. It was fantastic.
Which one?
Spelling.
Oh. it was long. I mean, on the list of analogy, it's not top 10, man.
It was more like an epic movie, you know, like the Titanic of analogies rather than like a short, concise statement, which might have like a better, you know, general aesthetic, but doesn't have as meaningful a point like your phone tree analogy.
So what you're saying is that it's just self-important and...
No, I'm saying that I gave an Oscar-winning analogy and you gave a People's Choice winning analogy.
Hey, you know what? I'll take that People's Choice Award.
Yes, you would. okay, so there's one last thing I want to touch on, which I think plays into this whole self-service thing, and it's sort of on the Tableau spectrum of capabilities a little newer, which is this web edit thing. Right. Yep. So we've mentioned this on the show before, but I want to just deeply dive into it for just a moment. Just a really quick deep dive, like a high dive at the Olympics.
So not like your analogy from
we're going deep, but then we're coming right back out.
Okay.
So we might even get the bends. We're coming out so quickly. That's a scuba diving joke, in case you were curious. So the web edit functionality is really brief description. It's sort of like a light version of Tableau Desktop in a browser, right? So it's, if you're on Tableau server, you're looking at a view. If you've been permissioned to do so, you click the edit button. It puts you into a screen where you can drag and drop. You can create your own visualizations. You can create filters. In the newest version, you create some calculations. You can do some other things too. It doesn't have all of Tableau Desktop's functionalities. For example, you can't connect to data. You can't create a dashboard. But it has a lot of the capabilities.
Right.
And the idea as it was introduced was it will allow users to do some quick edits to a view. So if they see a dashboard and they like it, but they want to see, instead of sales, they want to see it for a number of transactions, they could switch that on the fly. If they'd rather see a line chart than a bar chart, they could change that on the fly. If they want to create their own custom view, they can do that on the fly. But they don't do the more kind of development or authoring type capabilities that someone who's building dashboards for others might do. That has sort of clouded the difference between what a author and a consumer will do in Tableau. And a lot of that is really positive, because it forces our customers and people who are trying to implement analytics of their business to think about who should be doing this, right? And it takes down the barriers around licensing and just logistics for how to differentiate people, and really thinks about what are their skill levels and what is their curiosity level. So I think that's a really good thing. But the question that Ed has brought up a lot for me is, what should this capability be used for? Because I've had a lot of customers take a look at it and say, well, why wouldn't we give this to everyone? Or should we give this to anyone? If we give it to everyone, then we're going to run into all these risks around people being able to drill down to levels or view underlying data or download something they shouldn't be able to download. And if we don't give it to anyone, then we're not really empowering people to do analytics the way Tableau envisions and prescribes. So what's the middle ground here? So what are your thoughts on that? What do you think that web edit capability is for, and where do you think it's going?
So web edit is interesting. I think it tries to solve a number of different things all at once. And I think it's actually on the right path for all of it, but it's really just a matter of basically understanding sort of the perspective that you're really looking in from. On one end, of course, the most noticeable end is that we're simply becoming much more and more of a server-driven sort of technology, just in general, right? And when I talk about this, I don't really mean just Tableau alone, but just our concept of workstation is becoming lighter and lighter as we move across. Sort of how hardware is being developed, or how, of course, hardware is being pushed out into the market. So the day-to-day work that we're using is just more cloud-based. There's a lot more collaboration tools. And most users, if they don't need to, all they might need to, of course, need to open on their day-to-day work is just a web browser. And they can, of course, carry around a very light piece of hardware, like a Chromebook, or probably not a Chromebook, but... We're moving toward
in the same way that a desktop tower used to be the computer of choice for a business person 10 years ago. Now a laptop, no one has towers anymore. Everyone has a laptop, so they can take it home with them, and it's more portable. They can go to meetings. But now we're almost entering into an era where the laptop's going to be outmoded, and people are just going to bring their iPad around or whatever touch-enabled, lightweight device works for them, because everything they need to do is on that device rather than on their highly powered machine or whatever that they use now.
Yeah, so the platform itself is one issue that I think Web Edit is really trying to tackle.
It allows us to centralize that capability because it uses a browser rather than an app written for a specific device.
Exactly, yep. Right. It just kind of pairs with modern-day architecture of how we think about software as well. The other side, though, is really around sort of that bridging of the gap between sort of the power user and the consumer. And we've had that question a lot in the past. I mean, I remember back in the 5.0 and 6.0 days, we typically answer the question where the line was actually fairly broad, right? You have some users who will never touch analytics, right? And our assumption about the market at the time was really around the fact that there are people who are designated to deal with data, and there are people who are informed about data. And that was sort of the split between the two different rounds that's there. Hmm. What we're finding, I think, is that it's typically much more vague. It's much more of a gray area in between, where there are some folks who do need to work with data, who need to stay informed, but might not necessarily have analysts directly in their title, or a data scientist, you know, specifically under their wing that's there.
Yeah, so, or what about the person who is put on a three-month project, which requires them to look at data all the time, but their other responsibilities outside of that might have them only looking at data once a month, right?
Yeah. The classic example, I think, is, you know, just thinking in software is just what a project manager might be involved with, right? Do they need to understand the data and to actually be well-educated and informed about it? Yes. And that means they need to ask their own questions. That means they're bringing, of course, new insights to the table that are unique from everybody else's. But are they somebody that is directly invested into how we connect to data? Are they somebody who needs to understand sort of the accounting mechanics of how specific gross margins are calculated? Well, not exactly, right? And so it ends up in that very gray area of how do we support those users? And it's actually worked out really well in specifically helping that group bridge a gap where they know that the data source is governed. They know that they don't need to invest the additional effort around managing software, about installing basically the latest build and making sure they're keeping up. But really making sure that that group still has full access to information that's there, and that they can pivot and sort of build their own visual analytics, at least from the mix. And so I see it from those two different ends. And, you know, from my perspective, it's actually doing a pretty good job of both right now. It's really just a matter of which thing is more important to, I think, the organization that we talk to.
Yeah, the thing that I am a little concerned about is that I'm not sure where it's supposed to fall, right? Because as the capabilities of WebEd evolve to meet additional customer needs, I think what we find is that the definition of who should use it also changes. And the concern for a lot of our customers, I think, is going to be, well, how should we think about what our business users can and should be able to do with respect to data, and how should we make sure that we are governing that correctly? And I think that actually is a real concern in a lot of businesses because of high and tight requirements around different roles and data security and things like that. And when I think the way the vision is behind WebEdit is everything that you can do, every capability, so not necessarily whether or not you can drag and drop a certain field, but every different type of capability, whether it's be able to create a visualization, be able to save a visualization, be able to download, be able to view data, et cetera, should have an on-off switch in the server for permission perspective, so that customers or administrators to a Tableau server can really clearly define how they want their consumers to be able to interact with data, and it gives them really fine control. But where we're at right now is that it isn't controlled as finely as that, and there's kind of more buckets of permissions, right? And so that makes it harder for, I think, our customers to think through what capabilities do we want to give to our users, and how do those align with Tableau's kind of hand-picked buckets of control.
Right. I think it's still the concern of the limitation of a centralized resource. Mm-hmm. And that approach, that mindset of how they actually build out technology on the back end, as opposed to, of course, thinking around sort of the technology and what it can do for the community that's there. There's, you know, I think when we kind of describe it in those two different ways, and just knowing that at some point, server, this web authoring, will likely have some level of parity. We'll probably have a very close parity, I should say, to Tableau Desktop that's there. The architecture on the back end would be very different than what we ever saw before. But at the front end, of course, we're now opening up access in a very open way for a lot larger group to be asking questions from there. And people have to now reassess whether or not their security models really fit well to it, whether or not it's the right way that still reinforces governance, and of course, whether or not they're sized up correctly in order to maintain that level of question and answering, right? That level of traffic on their system. If people are going to be hammering it as hard as what we've seen people do just from their workstation with Tableau Desktop. So it kind of poses a lot of questions just from that divergence of those two different development tracks, I think, for us, or those ideals for us. But it does pose a lot of questions, I think, for our end users in thinking around sort of how they might best approach it, or what it might mean for them and their clients that's there. And I think a lot of people are placing the concept in different areas based upon sort of what they think is best for their current clients that's there. So on that scale of self-service, what does it really mean?
Okay. Yeah. So I think I want to pull out of our dive before we crash, Wilson. I think it's actually a good time to wind down the conversation, because we actually don't know where this is going, right? We know that the technology is going to continue to evolve, and that I think the philosophy is to give more people, not fewer people, the ability to use Tableau's capabilities. We're not exactly sure how that's going to manifest itself in Tableau and in other tools. I guess the last thing that I want to say is, for now, you know, if you were going to implement Tableau 9.3 and wanted to figure out the best way to enable self-service and ad hoc analysis on Tableau Server, I think the best recommendation is to put a really, if governance is important to you, I think the best way to do it is to put a really strategic approach to monitoring, right? Because Tableau Server allows you to control a lot of stuff, but it doesn't allow you to control everything. Mm-hmm. But it allows you to monitor a great deal more than you can control in terms of what people have access to, what they're doing on the server, what they're accessing, who has the permission to do what, etc. And so being able to do that is actually how internally to Tableau we monitor the proliferation of workbooks on our server, for example, and who looks at them and whether or not things should be published to certain projects or not, and whether they should be stricken from the server if there are things that shouldn't be on there, et cetera. So I think that's a really important point. And we've done some podcasts in the past on monitoring. It might be something to come back to with respect to this topic in the future. But I think that's... if you were going to implement Tableau today, that would be something to keep heavily in mind when it comes to this topic.
Yep.
Any other thoughts there?
Around sort of the best way to kind of govern it, I would say probably that, but to also, of course, just reassess the rules, but to build sort of a process around it, right? So one of the big things that I typically see is that, you know, people are afraid to do anything different because... change requires headcount, requires, of course, a lot of brain power to put behind. But that's very limiting in terms of how you approach analytics and the questions you don't know to ask quite yet. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave it at just that, right? And thinking around sort of the questions that we haven't quite asked yet. And a lot of times governance, I think, is important for the security of our data, around sort of how we can streamline the effects for it for end users. But we can live, I think, with a little bit less streamlined if people have a little bit more freedom around sort of how they answer their questions that's there. And I think there's a lot of benefits or a lot of questions that aren't well answered for us to know how to best streamline things quite at this point yet. So, you know, to that effect, it's just a simple encouragement for folks to really kind of reassess with new technology how governance really should work and whether or not we can allow for a little bit more self-driven sort of analytics within sort of the environment, given the new developments with the technology that we're bringing.
Okay, great. So I think that was great. I think that was a good overview of self-service, a good crash course in kind of what it means, and a good discussion about what Tableau's perspective on it is, which is, as we have kind of both admitted, is evolving, and we're trying to keep up with it as much as anybody. But I think this capability has really yet to be introduced to the market in its final form, right? And there's a lot of really exciting developments that we're going to see, both from Tableau and other technologies down the road. So that's great. As a final point here, I was talking to someone that works with us the other day, Paul Albert Wilson, who you and I both know, and he's been a great supporter of our VizWiz competition. And he also mentioned that he liked the podcast, and he said that he likes the drink recipes, Wilson. So we haven't talked about drinks on this episode because we're on Skype for this one. So we're in separate rooms, and I'm drinking a glass of water, and you said you were drinking some coffee. But I wanted to present a drink recipe for everyone. And in honor of Easter, which was a week ago, but still kind of fresh in my mind, I have Mike Kravick's favorite Easter drink, the Corpse Reviver number 2.
Ooh.
So this is a great drink, and it's a impressive cocktail because it uses a lot of ingredients. So if you're at a cocktail party or you have someone over and you're trying to impress them, right, you can make this and it looks really cool because you can combine all these ingredients, and it's a really tasty drink. And it's kind of something anyone, I think, can enjoy because it's very citrus based. So, you know, it's got sort of universal appeal, but it's also got some unique flavors in it. So here's your recipe for a Corpse Reviver number 2. So it's a gin-based drink. So most recently, I made it with my Dorothy Parker gin, which is a great gin made here in Brooklyn. But whatever just typical kind of classic London Dry gin you have will work. It also uses lemon juice. So all these parts in a Corpse Reviver are typically 1:1:1:1. So about a shot of each of these things is a pretty good proportion. Shot of gin, shot of lemon juice, a shot of Cointreau, which is an origin flavored liqueur, and the shot of, I've heard a number of different things for this fourth ingredient. I use Lillet Blanc, which is sort of a refined wine liqueur that's got a little sweetness to it. You could probably use a sweet vermouth. I've also seen a Coqui Americano, which is similar in flavor and style. Just some sort of kind of wine-based aperitif spirit should work fine. I think the Lillet is my favorite. And then you're going to shake all of those ingredients in a cocktail shaker with ice. The other piece to this puzzle is a absinthe or other anise flavored liqueur. I use Ricard because it's cheap. And I don't really get a lot out of liquor like that that's very licorice in flavor, but this only uses a very small amount, right? So you could do it like a rinse. You could put it in your martini, your coupe, or whatever glass you want to use. This is typically served up and kind of swirl it around just to coat the glass. Or you could just put like a teaspoon or a half teaspoon into your shaker and shake it that way. I kind of like the rinse because you'll kind of get the aroma, but it won't be too strong of a flavor. You'll just strain your drink into that. I use like a coupe glass or just some sort of up glass, whatever you want to use. And you can garnish it with a cocktail cherry if you want. A classic cocktail cherry, not a maraschino, like bright red one, but one of those dark ones that's soaked in brandy. And it's a really delicious drink. And I tend to make them a lot this time of year because the weather's still a little cool, but it's starting to turn into spring. And the citrusiness and the herbalness is a really nice combination. And again, it's an impressive drink to make. So there's your Corpse Reviver number 2. I think we've made them before on the podcast, maybe before we were distributing them publicly. Always something that we enjoy getting at cocktail bars or when we're together. That's it. There's your drink recipe, Paul Albert. Enjoy that in your car on the way to work.
Really?
Well, he said he likes to listen on the
Oh, I thought you were.